This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Despite the spike in gas prices, America's highways welcome more cars every day, and that means America's drivers face ever more congestion. Despite the evident need for more and wider roads, most state transportation agencies complain that their budgets are only getting leaner. Now, from the Trans-Texas Corridor to the Washington Beltway, private companies have offered to step in and construct the next generation of highways if they're allowed to collect tolls in return. The states are trying their hands at this, too. Among the best-known models is the Riverside Freeway in Southern California, or more specifically, the Express 91 lanes in the middle of the freeway. Joining us now is Chris Hughes. He covers the Riverside Freeway as a traffic reporter for KFI AM 640 in Burbank, California. Nice of you to be with us today.
Nice to be with you.
It's a little after 11 o'clock in the morning there. What's traffic on the Riverside Freeway like?
Right now on the Riverside Freeway, which is the 91 East, there's a pocket of traffic from Lakeview to Imperial, then up ahead at Pierce, a metal bar in the two left lanes, then on the 91 East at Tyler, which is further beyond that, a four-car crash with about a two-mile backup from Magnolia, and then going the opposite direction, West 91, past the 15. There's another accident that's moved off to the right shoulder. That's backed up from McKinley, so about a two-mile backup there.
So not moving swiftly. Is that a fair summation?
Oh, that's fair indeed.
What about the lanes in the middle, the Express 91 lanes?
Actually, those are moving quite nicely right now.
Now, tell us a little bit more about these Express 91 lanes. There, as I understand it, there's something called hot lanes. What does that stand for?
That stands for high occupancy toll lanes.
So if you've got four people in your car, you're allowed on?
Yes, three plus, you're allowed through free or half price, depending on the time of day. Everyone else pays a pretty steep fare.
And how steep is it?
On Thursday and Friday afternoons, heading eastbound, which is the absolute worst time for the freeway, it can be up to $7.
How do they adjust the rates like that? I mean, the toll collectors ask for more money depending on what time of day it is?
It is completely an automatic toll system. You must have what's called a transponder, and it's issued by a company called Fast Track. And there's no toll collectors, and what they have are changeable message signs that when the traffic gets heavy on predetermined schedules that OCTA, which is the transit agency here, determines, they will adjust the toll. So it starts anywhere from $1.05 in the morning, which be 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, all the way into the afternoon, which can be $7. And then the signs will change to tell you what the current toll is.
So you can make this decision as you go along. As I understand it, you not only cover the Riverside Freeway, you drive the Riverside Freeway.
I do drive the Riverside Freeway every morning and every afternoon.
And what do you do? Do you pay for the express lanes and your privilege of getting to work, 20 minutes faster or something?
Well, exactly. If I'm running late for work, and it may only save me because I'm at 4:30 in the morning, but even then, the traffic is starting to build on the 91. So if I'm running late for work and it's really important that I get to work on time, then I will pay that $2, I think it is at that time. It is $2 at that time to save those 5 extra minutes. And definitely in the afternoon, if I leave work, get out late at 3 or 4 o'clock, then after that, you can sit in traffic for an hour if you don't use the toll lane. So it really depends. If I really need to get home or I'm really tired or I really don't feel like sitting in the traffic, that's when I'll do it. If I'm feeling better, maybe I'll just ride in the regular lanes.
So maybe, 3 days out of 5? 4 days out of 5? Every day?
I would say probably 3 days out of 5. Yeah, that's fair to say.
Well, Chris Hughes, thanks very much. Did you ever consider doing national traffic? Big backup behind St. Louis.
We could do it all from here.
Chris Hughes, thanks very much for being with us today.
No problem.
Chris Hughes is a traffic reporter for KFI 640 AM in Burbank, California, and he joined us from the station studios there. Southern California is also the destination of a great white shark recently released from captivity after eating several of her tank mates. We'll hear about her further adventures later this hour. But right now, traffic solutions. What do you think? Are you willing to pay extra to save some time and frustration? Do you welcome innovations like hot lanes or worry that they're unfair? Is it appropriate for private companies to build and operate roads? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And the email address is totn@npr.org. One man who's clear on his answers to those questions is Robert Poole, Director of Transportation Studies at the Reason Foundation, which is a libertarian think tank. And he's with us now from his home in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Nice to have you on Talk of the Nation.
Good to be here. Thanks.
As I understand, you've been arguing for privatization of the nation's highway system for 17 years now. Is this, you see this as some sort of turning point?
I think so. So the last 18 months have been kind of like one of the Malcolm Gladwell's tipping point for the idea, and it's popping up all over the country, particularly the places that are plagued with awful rush hour traffic congestion.
And what examples do you point to? Are the hot lanes on the Riverside Freeway?
Well, hot lanes on the Beltway in Washington, D.C. were just approved at the end of last week. There's three or four different proposals in Atlanta, some from private companies, some are just being considered by the State Road and Tollway Authority. The Minneapolis-St. Paul is converting an HOV lane to a hot lane this month. I mean, they'll cut it over and people will start being able to pay. A project to do the same thing to convert an underutilized HOV lane to hot lane is moving forward in Denver. It should be operational by this fall. Big private sector proposals in Texas, ranging upwards from some of them in the billion-dollar scale, one at about between $6 and $7 billion. So, I mean, there's a lot of activity going on, and it's kind of staggering considering how slow this idea was to catch on for the past 12 or 13 years.
Well, tell us about how this works. I mean, those HOV lanes were set aside to ease traffic congestion by encouraging people to you can get a quicker ride if you have a lot of people in your car.
Problem is, it's not very sustainable long term. You either have the problem of it's not popular enough, in which case you're wasting an awful lot of expensive concrete on a lot of empty space, even though some people do carpool. But in those selected corridors where it works well, after a while, those special lanes fill up, and they don't offer much time-saving advantage compared to the regular lanes. Whereas if you turn them into priced lanes, the variable pricing tool turns out to be very flexible and very powerful. You can actually keep the traffic flowing by metering the flow, limiting the number of vehicles that use the lane in a given time period, keep it flowing smoothly at high speed, and really basically guarantee people time savings.
And also, as we heard in the case of the hot lanes on the Riverside Freeway in California, the price is adjusted varying on the time of day and congestion. Hello? Yes. So technology is a big part of this.
It's a very big part of this. None of this would be possible without, first of all, the nonstop electronic toll collection. In the East Coast, it's called Easy Pass, and here in Florida, it's called Sun Pass. In the West Coast, it's called Fast Track, but it's all the same technology. It's a radio frequency a beam that reads your account number on the fly at 65 miles per hour or faster, and basically debits your account for the amount of the toll. And that means the toll can be whatever level is needed to be a proper screener of traffic flow.
Now, is there any data about which drivers pay to use these kinds of lanes?
Yes, both the two most successful projects are the one on the Riverside Freeway in Orange County, California, and another one on I-15 in San Diego. Both of them have had detailed academic studies that looked at all kinds of questions, including the demographics of who uses them. And what we find is that, as you would expect, the people who use them the most are people in higher incomes. I mean, just like, you know, who goes to nice restaurants, who buys coffee in Starbucks rather than a 25-cent cup of coffee, it's people with more disposable income. However, the really interesting finding is that even in the bottom 20% of the income distribution, you have significant use. But that use, I mean, there's virtually nobody in the lower half of the income distribution that uses them every day. But what most people do, most ordinary people, is they use them as a kind of insurance policy. You have the transponder on your windshield, you have an account set up, and day by day, trip by trip, you assess the situation when you're approaching those express lanes and decide, how important is it to me to save 20 minutes today? Do I really need to be there on time? Is it worth paying $2, $3, $4, whatever the price may be at that time? And if it is, you pay and you go and you get the time savings. And if it isn't, you just fight it out with everybody else in the regular lanes.
Now, do you worry that the introduction of these systems, should they become much more popular and more widely used across the country, in a system like they have in California, like the one we heard described at the beginning of this segment, isn't it inevitable that more and more people are going to want to use the less congested hot lanes and that, well, as they go more and more to the hot lanes, maintenance falls off on the rest of the highway, and inevitably you end up with a really dramatically two-tiered system?
That is a danger. That could happen. But for one thing, it's important to keep in mind that the highway system in general is like 99.9% of the system. And even if we added whole networks of these lanes in the major cities with congestion, they'd still account for maybe half of 1% of the total lane miles of the highway system. So the gasoline tax that pays for the ongoing maintenance of the system would still be used for that system. And the good news is that the premium toll revenues that people seem to be willing to pay to save time in many cases are enough to pay for, they're certainly enough to pay for the full maintenance of the express lanes, but in some cases they're enough to pay for most or all of the cost of building new express lanes from scratch. And that's in fact going to be the case on the Washington Beltway.
And you're also suggesting that by bringing these new technologies, we're going to be getting much more innovative roads.
Oh, yes. I mean, I think just being able to buy time savings is probably only the first step. I mean, once you have the communications technology in place, you can go to a somewhat more expensive transponder and have two-way communications so that you can have a little screen in the car that warns you of road hazards, alerts you to things that you need to pay attention to, and so forth. And this may get married into some of the advanced, what are called ITS, intelligent transportation system technologies, like cruise control that has a feature that, like radar, that keeps you from bumping into the car ahead of you by putting on your brakes and so forth. Hmm. There's a lot of new technology coming along. The cars of the 21st century are going to not be that much like the cars of the 20th century by the time this revolution rolls through, nor are the highways going to be like 20th century highways.
We're talking about the future of our highways. Will they be freeways? Our number, if you'd like to join the conversation, is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. Back after the break. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about new strategies states have on the board to raise money and control traffic. Toll lanes, private roads, fast passes. Are you already paying to speed up your commute? How much is an open road worth to you? Our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. Our guest is Robert Poole, Director of Transportation Research at the Reason Foundation. Let's get some callers on the line. Melissa is with us. Melissa's calling from Columbia, South Carolina.
Hi. I have a comment and a question about an alternative thing for use for the HOV lanes. I was wondering why, especially in medium-sized or smaller cities, that they can't be changed into rail lines for trains. I live in a city that's currently pretty small, but it's growing and traffic is getting worse, and I'm really disturbed by the fact that, as far as I know, there's no plans for trains. So is that a possibility or a ridiculous scenario?
Robert Poole?
Okay. Your intuition is right that we could use those rights-of-way for higher capacity transit, but especially in a smaller community, high-speed bus guaranteed to operate at the speed limit is probably a much more flexible and lower-cost alternative than rail. The same bus can pick people up in a neighborhood, get onto the high-speed premium lane, go nonstop to an area full of jobs, and then make a number of stops to drop people off practically at their door. A train can't do that. A train requires people to get to it on one end, wait on the platform, take the train, then at the other end, if you're lucky, it's right near your destination. But chances are you're going to need a shuttle of some sort to actually get where you need to go. So that's potentially three vehicles instead of one and two waiting times, as opposed to a single-seat ride with the high-speed bus.
Melissa, does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it does. Are there any plans that you know of that happening in Houston already?
Yes, actually, I'm glad you asked that. Houston is really pioneering this in the United States. They are building four hot lanes in the median of their most congested freeway called the Katy Freeway. And an integral part of the plan is high-speed express bus service that will operate in this flexible way. It'll be fed partly at park-and-ride lots, but some of those same buses will be able to do local pickups. And then when they get to the end at downtown Houston, they make a number of stops. So it's a prototype, and I think it's something that other cities should definitely be considering.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Melissa. Here's an email that we have, this from Christian. I was wondering about a technology used in Canada and if it could be used here as well. In Canada, they use a camera system to photograph license plates of vehicles using toll roads and send a bill to the registered owner of the vehicle. There are no backups at all on ramps as cars move on it at a regular rate of speed. I was traveling around the Toronto area and found this to be convenient. Got a bill a short time later, even though my vehicle was registered in the state of New York.
Yes, that works. That's the Highway 407 toll road in Toronto. Very innovative, and it's privately run on a 99-year lease. There are similar nonstop toll collection systems that don't require a transponder on your car in Israel, the Cross Israel Highway. In Santiago, Chile, a whole system is just going live this year. And in Melbourne, Australia, I've driven on the Toronto one and on the Melbourne one, and they're great.
Let's get another guest on the show. Not everybody is sold on the idea of these hot lanes. Joining us now is Mantle Williams, a spokesman for the American Automobile Association. He's with us from Jersey City in New Jersey. Nice to have you on the program.
Thanks for having me.
AAA opposes these hot lanes. How come?
No, AAA does not oppose the hot lanes. We view of looking at these hot lanes on a case-by-case basis, and we believe that, if these hot lanes, if they give motorists the option to pay an alternative, if it's on an alternative or parallel road facility that provides that superior level of service, we definitely would support it on a case-by-case basis. Now, where we would have an issue with it is if you are putting these hot lanes on either they're not on existing capacity. We think that you should use this type of opportunity in order to expand the capacity like that's going on in the Washington, D.C. area where they're adding on the Beltway. Or if you have an underutilized HOV system, because we know HOV doesn't work in every place. So when HOV has been underutilized, then we would definitely support it, probably those hot lanes in those particular situations.
Particularly if it involves people, as you say, adding capacity, either expanding a road or building a new one.
Yeah, absolutely. We think that if it's taxing or either adding a toll to existing capacity, we think that's just punishing people, and that is more punitive, and we don't think that's really going to help improve the flow of traffic, and it's really not going to really help people out in terms of their daily commute.
Now, I find it somewhat curious. We're reaching you in the state of New Jersey. Now, the New Jersey Turnpike is ostensibly a part of I-95, but it's certainly not a freeway.
That is correct. New Jersey is a toll road. I'm actually at the AAA National Office. I'm based out of D.C., but I have to be up here for a meeting. But again, the New Jersey Turnpike was established, as a toll road. It was established as a road that does add capacity. So in those cases where you are adding capacity, where you're giving the motorist another option, or where you're taking an existing HOV lane that has been completely underutilized and you're turning that into a hot lane. In those particular cases, we may support some of those.
Do you have any opinion as to whether it's appropriate for private companies to build and operate these roads or whether they should be maintained and operated by state agencies?
Well, I think private financing could be a viable alternative, for generating funds for toll construction. But I think where we have to be careful is that, however, of these franchise agreements for privately financed toll roads, they should never prevent public agencies from making the needed capacity and safety improvements on those non-price lanes and roads.
So as you look at the future, do you think that there's going to be a lot more construction of our old familiar interstate highways, or do you think that we're going to be switching to more of these more innovative approaches?
Yeah, I think it's going to have to be a combination of a number of things because as we found out that people are not willing to pay higher gas taxes. And when we've actually tried to float proposals out there to where people can even pay for transportation on their sales tax, even a half cent of sales tax, people aren't willing to pay more in taxes. So it may be our only alternative. If that's the only way we can get additional capacity by building these high occupancy toll roads or toll roads, that may be our only alternative in certain circumstances.
Well, thank you very much.
All right, thank you.
Mantle Williams is spokesperson for the AAA, the American Automobile Association, and he joined us from the Hyatt Hotel in Jersey City, New Jersey, where, as he said, he's attending a conference. And Robert Poole, talk to us a minute. The New Jersey Turnpike, as he mentioned, was established as a toll road and then incorporated into the interstate system. But the interstate highway system constructed after the war, the Eisenhower Interstate System, this really had a different philosophy.
Well, it's from a whole philosophy, like the Pennsylvania Turnpike that was the pioneer of long-distance toll road, was that tolling can provide both the initial funding source and a superior source of ongoing funds for maintenance, repair, expansion, and rebuilding, because highways do wear out. Sometimes people have the idea that once the initial bonds are paid off, it's unfair to have the road continue as a toll road. But the Pennsylvania Turnpike is now undergoing a complete rebuild because the pavement is just worn out. And that is the way of roads. They're never really paid for in the final sense. You always have ongoing maintenance expenses, and eventually you have complete reconstruction. So it doesn't bother me that we have a system that the interstate system that is partly toll and partly quote unquote free. But it does bother me actually when you look ahead the next 25 years or so, as we have more and more alternative fuels, mm-hmm. possibly something like hydrogen fuel cells. Certainly, the existing tax on gasoline and diesel fuel may not be around by the middle of the century. And in that case, something more like tolling is probably going to be the option of choice.
Unless they devise some sort of new tax on those alternative fuels. But that's
issue. That's always a possibility.
Yes. Or they could also raise the gasoline tax and have more money flowing into the interstate system and build really nice roads.
They could if wishes were horses.
Let's get some more callers on the line. This is Teresa. Teresa's in her car phone in Miami. Hello, Teresa.
Yes, hello.
Yes, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. I had a question about, has anybody ever thought of graduating the toll according to the speed of travel? Kind of like blending the turnpike into the Autobahn system.
Oh, that's an interesting idea. I've never actually heard of that, but I don't see why it wouldn't be possible. You could have higher speed lanes for a premium price, like the Autobahns, go 75, 85, 90 miles an hour.
Yeah, because I travel about 70 to 80,000 miles a year, and I would gladly pay twice what I pay in tolls now to be able to do it at 125 miles an hour.
Well, the Autobahns, the safety record of the Autobahns has been studied, and they don't appear to have any higher accident rate than our interstate highways. So it seems that it is quite possible to have safe, much higher speed highways. If
they're going to privatize the system, it takes the federal government out of regulating the speed limit.
That's true. That's true. And if you had a private franchise operation, there would be no reason in principle, as long as they were responsible for designing it for safe, the right kind of curves and banking and so forth to handle the higher speeds. There's no reason in principle why they shouldn't be allowed to offer that for sale.
Well, thank you. That basically was my question. I was wanted to throw it up in the air and see if maybe someday it happens.
Teresa, thanks very much.
All right, thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's go now to Ven, and Ven's with us from Rockford, Michigan. Hello, Ven.
Yeah, hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah. Obviously, I don't know if the guy told you, but I'm pretty much against it.
How come?
Anything that could exclude somebody with less money than somebody else, it's a privilege for the rich.
Well, there's first-class travel on trains.
Including Amtrak, run by the government.
This is a little different than the train or something, It's freeways and highways were never made to exclude people with less money.
Well, there have always been tolls on, as we were talking about, the Pennsylvania Turnpike, New Jersey Turnpike, Massachusetts Turnpike. All those places have tolls. Everybody pays them.
Right. Right. Yeah, but they don't have exclusive lanes that can reduce your trip by 100 or 200%, you know.
So you'd basically think this is unfair?
Yeah.
All right. All right, Robert Poole, can you respond to that?
Well, I mean, I think some people will have that view, and I think that review has to be looked at and taken seriously. But I think on the other side of it, you have to look at we have a funding crisis in this country. We are not taking in enough money to add virtually any capacity to the highway system. We have massive congestion problems. If there's some kind of a public policy innovation that somehow persuades people to pay hefty tolls to make it possible for there to be an escape valve that everybody can use when they really need it, and that transit buses can operate at high speeds and reliable service, seems to me that's a good trade-off. That even though, yeah, not everybody can use it every day because it's expensive, the society is going to benefit from having that relief valve available on as many freeways as possible for emergency vehicles, for the police to get to accidents and so forth, and for the transit system to use to offer a much higher quality of service. So I think, given the funding crunch affecting highways, that there's a lot of merit, even though not everyone will like the feel of the idea.
We're talking with Robert Poole of the Reason Foundation about the increasing possibility of both public and private toll roads replacing interstate highways. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller on the line. This is Rodney in Stevens City, Virginia.
Yes, sir. I've been delivering air freight in the Washington, D.C. area for the last 20 years, and I've been following this hot lane they're talking about with the Virginia Beltway.
Widening the Washington Beltway in Virginia by a couple of lanes, which would be hot lanes. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, and it doesn't make any sense at all what they're talking about doing. All I've heard is what they've released in the news, and they're saying from Springfield to the Georgetown Pike. And that's one of the few areas of the Beltway that flies during rush hour.
Hmm.
What you're going to do there, if you put in two more lanes merging into the Beltway at Georgetown Pike, you're going to back up that part, which doesn't back up now.
Well, we're losing your cell phone, Rodney, but I'll put your question to Robert Poole, and just to explain to listeners who are not from the Washington, D.C. area that the place he's talking about was just about where the Memorial Bridge crosses the Potomac River and meets the George Washington Parkway in Northern Virginia and hooks up with the Beltway there. But go ahead.
Unfortunately, I don't drive. I've only driven the Beltway once in my life, and it was an absolute parking lot.
Oh, you lucky
dog. It was the stretch where the hot lanes are being proposed, and I would have eagerly paid twice to go going toll rate to get where I needed to go. But I find it hard to believe that his traffic perceptions are accurate because, I mean, the companies, the team of companies that have the proposal that was just accepted really know their stuff. I mean, they've been in the business of doing roads, and one of them operates successful toll roads in Australia. I can't imagine they would pick a stretch of the Beltway that has that doesn't have a huge congestion problem and that desperately needs relief that people would be willing to pay for.
And if they have chosen the wrong place, that's their problem.
It's their problem. That's right. There's no taxpayer money at risk in this project.
Now, there have been problems. Now, another toll road in Southern California, the 73 in Orange County, is, as I understand it, facing potential default.
That's correct. It looks like it may default by, I think it's 2013, because it's simply not getting as much traffic as was forecast. But even there, even though that's a government agency toll road, the bonds are toll revenue bonds. They are not an obligation on the general taxpayers of Orange County. So if it goes bust, sophisticated bond buyers will be the ones who lose, but not the taxpayers.
And this was just a miscalculation by urban planners?
Miscalculation. You know, startup toll roads are pretty difficult to accurately forecast. The first 10 years or so of a toll road's traffic can depend on a lot of things, the state of the economy, the state of real estate development in the area. You know, the Dulles Greenway outside of Washington, D.C. Had to be refinanced after its first 3 or 4 years because the development hadn't taken place as much as projected. To today that road, that area is booming. The road is adding additional lanes. But the first few years were really, really tough. And that is true in general for toll roads. Some do better than forecast, but quite a few do worse than forecast in the first 5 or 6 years.
We're talking about the future of the American highway system. We're going to take a short break. When we come down, we'll continue our conversation with Robert Poole of the Reason Foundation. We'll also move from clogged roads to the open ocean on the trail of the most famous great white shark since Bruce, the star of Jaws. And we'll also talk today about the formation and the acceptance of the new coalition government in Baghdad. Stay with us. If you'd like to join the conversation, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. Back after the break, it's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Today we're talking about new solutions to highway funding. Hardly surprising, most of them require you to put your money where your wheels are. Is privatization the answer? Our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. Our guest is Robert Poole, Director of Transportation at the Reason Foundation. He's with us by phone from his home in Fort Lauderdale in Florida. And let's get another caller on the line. Bob. Bob's calling from San Diego.
Yes, I wanted to make first a quick comment about the 91 and then go to the 15. The 91 has a problem in the contract with the state. It does not allow the state to improve the existing highway, and there have been many deaths out there. They even went to court about it and lost in court, so the existing highway is somewhat dangerous because of lack of improvement. The other thing is on the 15, I've been in San Diego 25 years. I watched that HOV lanes open, and someone from Caltrans at the time told me they expected people to look over and see another person in the car and figure out how they could do it. It didn't work. It's 8 1/3 miles long. And so then they put the speed pass on it where you can pay anywhere from 50 cents to $8 to go 8 1/3 miles. And I think it's ridiculous because the taxpayers paid for those roads, and now they're being charged double by having, and as an individual, you can buy your way on. But other than that, as a carpool, I think if you have two or more, you don't pay anything. But if you're an individual, you pay.
Robert Poole, why don't we take those things
okay. One
at a time?
Okay, in order. First, on the 91, there was a clause in the original privatization contract that said that the state agreed not to add any capacity in that corridor except for safety reasons. Growth was so rapid in that corridor that it became politically untenable. And although the company had the legal right to exercise its provision, the Orange County government prevailed on the legislature to give them the right to buy the company out, and they did. They bought them out at market value, and everybody came away happy. The road is now operated by the Orange County Transportation Authority, and improvements to the free lanes are underway.
Second point is double taxation.
Double taxation, right. The problem is when you have a lemon, what do you do with it? The HOV lane on I-15 was a lemon. It had vast amount of empty space that people simply weren't using to carpool. So a state senator who was a former mayor of Poway came up with the idea, why not sell the excess capacity to people willing to pay for a faster trip? And it's proved so successful. Despite the caller's view, he's very much in the minority. 80% of the population of every income group, every ethnic group, and every age group supports the idea that this is the best improvement that's ever been done in that corridor, and that and they support the expansion, which is currently underway, to make it 20 miles long instead of 8 miles.
So, Bob, I take it you don't use those lanes.
Thank God I live off the 5. I don't live on the 15, but the 15 is the worst traffic in San Diego. The 5 isn't good, but the 15 is much worse, and they are planning to put HOV lanes in on the 5. And I go to the meetings because I live right off, and I drive 2,000 miles a month around this county. And I noted, and one of the fellows from Caltrans told me, their forecasts show that even when they put two HOV lanes on each side of the freeway on the 5 running from Oceanside down to San Diego, they will be at excess capacity in 30 years. But that's their optimism. I wonder if it's the same optimism they used in 87 on the HOV lanes on the 15.
Bob, thanks very much for the call. Let's see if we get one more caller in on this question. And Rochelle. Rochelle is with us from San Jose, California. No
Hi.
Surprise, we're getting a lot of interested callers from California. Go ahead.
I think that these paved lanes, it's a terrible idea. At first, I'd like to see us stop talking about privatization as if it's a good thing, because it's really not. And also, it's just going to further polarize the society and isolate the people who are lower income more.
Well, let me ask you about that philosophical point, Rochelle. Privatization is a bad thing, you say.
Right. Private companies don't have any interest in the public good. The whole point of private companies is to make profits. And so something that is supposed to be for the whole society should not be left up to a private company.
Robert Poole.
Well, I mean, I think what Adam Smith attempted to teach us was that the beauty, the genius of a free market system is to channel private companies' desire to make a profit into figuring out what people want and need. And it turns out in this country there's an enormous suppressed demand for better, more reliable, faster commuting trips. And that's what private companies are now attempting to fulfill in a way that the public sector has just failed to do. The public sector has not, by and large, brought us things like hot lanes. Private sector has been taking the lead. Now, some of the projects are being done by the public sector now, but this is something that's been pioneered by the private sector because they saw a way to make money satisfying a real, real need that people have.
Rochelle?
Private sector gets huge subsidies from the government that people pay for, and so this isn't exactly a free market situation. If it were a real free market situation, the public wouldn't be subsidizing private companies.
Well, the 91 express lanes were built and operated by a private company with no government money whatsoever. Now, that's not always going to be the case. There are some hot lane projects that I've reviewed a lot of studies of planned ones. There are some that are so expensive that the amount of tolls that looks like people would be willing to pay wouldn't fully cover the cost. And so then the question is, I mean, I would say, is it a good use of public money to make sure that such projects come into existence and can be used by people to supplement what is available through the financing made possible by tolls? And that's a judgment call, but in general, I think these are good projects and are worth putting some of the user tax money from fuel taxes into.
I think a better use of public money would be public transportation that everyone can use and is available to all incomes.
Well, I agree that public transportation is important, and one of the benefits, one of the reasons why the San Francisco, the Metropolitan Transportation Commission of the whole Bay Area region has agreed on a $3 billion hot network, a network of hot lanes for the Bay Area, is because they see this facilitates region-wide high-speed express bus service. And that's a great benefit. It's a win-win proposition that drivers win, but so do transit users.
Rochelle, I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there. I appreciate your phone call, though.
Thanks a lot.
And I'd like to thank Robert Poole for his time today.
Thank you very much, Neil.
Robert Poole is Director of Transportation for the Reason Foundation and joined us by phone from his home in Fort Lauderdale in Florida.